And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. This is program 77 in the series. It's May 14th, and we'd like to welcome everyone tuning in to Classic Radio here Saturday and Sunday nights on Radio 720 WGN. Lisa Wolf to my right, the vivacious Lisa, with her very deep, deep...
I'm not going to help you out.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Carl.
How are you?
I'm excited to be here. We got a great show in store.
We have Mike Estella, the executive producer here. What's up, Mike? How are you?
I'm good.
And Shane Reardon, our producer. Hi, Shane. What's up, buddy?
I'm great, guys.
All right. Well, we have a terrific show. We're going to spotlight Jimmy Stewart. We have three classic radio shows with Jimmy Stewart tonight. We'll tune into The Six Shooter. We'll have Suspense and then the Screen Director's Playhouse presentation of Call Northside 777, very famous movie that Jimmy Stewart starred in. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor is the voice of Duke, a sloppy Newfoundland, in the family comedy The Secret Life of Pets.
All right, what do they win?
$25 gift card for Chicago's very best deep dish pizza, Lou Malnati's.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor that Lisa's talking about plays Cameron Tucker on Modern Family.
Cameron here bought an eggshell dryer.
Not white, not oatmeal, not Swiss coffee, not baby powder, not bone.
Eggshell.
All right, if you know who Cameron Tucker is on Modern Family, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Cameron here bought an eggshell dryer.
Not white, not oatmeal, not Swiss coffee, not baby powder, not bone.
Eggshell.
Hey, Kathy, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Great. Can you name that celebrity for us?
Eric Stone Street.
You are right, and you are a winner. I'm a big fan of Eric Stone Street. I'm guessing you are too. Isn't he fantastic? You've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of the very best deep dish pizza. I hope you enjoy that, and I hope that you share it with us. Okay.
I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, and check them out, of course, at loumalnati's.com. Thanks a lot, Kathy, for listening.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. All right, Lisa. It's time for our first classic radio show. We are spotlighting Jimmy Stewart. We've been spotlighting a different celebrity every single Saturday and Sunday here on WGN, and folks seem to like it, so we're going to do it for a little while longer. And as I said tonight, Jimmy Stewart, he's had his own regular radio series called The Six Shooter, where he played a kind of a slow-talking maverick who found himself embroiled in other people's problems and sometimes had to shoot his way out of them. It was a Western, and he starred as Britt Ponsett, frontier drifter, an all-around good guy, premiered on NBC Radio 1953. Now, Ponsett carried a gray steel six-gun with an unmarked rainbow mother-of-pearl handle. People called them both the six-shooter. That's how that was. See how they made that all come together there? Six-shooter? No,
don't,
you don't get it.
Don't
okay,
get it.
Well, Lisa doesn't get it, but maybe you will now, because we have a radio episode from October 25th, 1953. It's called Red Lawson, and let's tune this in. Jimmy Stewart starring as the six-shooter.
In just a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, just one of the many great stars brought to you Sundays on NBC. Every Sunday, hear Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy in The Marriage. Sir Laurence Olivier on Theatre Royal, Lawrence Tibbett with the Golden Voices, Helen Hayes, Frederick March, Rex Harrison, and Lily Palmer on the NBC Star Playhouse. All of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends. Now, Act One of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart.
I hadn't seen Mary and Dan for pretty near 3 years, not since they left the panhandle. So I figured as long as I was riding up through the Platte River country, I might as well swing out of my way a piece and look in on them. Now, we'd been real good friends for a long time. It was kind of like going home. And the closer I got, the more I kept thinking back. Remembering. Kind of daydreaming. You know, riding across Prairie Flat sort of does that to you. Your horse, he kind of finds his own trail mostly, and you just slouch easy-like in the saddle and listen to the hoofbeats, steady, regular. Things you haven't thought about for years sneak into your head. Anyhow, I still had a day to go, and I was watching out for a good spot to bed down when I saw this campfire up ahead. Well, the way I figure, human beings are always better company than coyotes, so I gave Scar a flick with the reins and headed up toward it. Whoa, easy now, boy. There we go. Easy. Ah, howdy.
Hiya.
You'd rather camp private?
Well, climb down. Pour yourself some java.
Well, thanks. Easy, boy. Ooh. Hey, whiz, that smells good.
Yeah.
You, any notion about how far this Walnut Creek?
20 miles or so, right? That's where you're going?
Yeah, I stopped in Noble there. A couple of friends there I haven't seen in quite a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a fellow there I ain't seen for a while neither.
That's all. Hey, by George, there's good coffee.
Yeah, I've been hunting him for over 3 years. Finally located him. I'm gonna kill him.
How come?
I murdered my kid brother 4 years ago in Laredo. Shut him down in the street.
Yeah. Well, another killing won't bring him back.
Oh, nothing will bring him back. After I killed Dan Mailer, nothing will bring him back, neither.
Dan Mailer?
That's right, Ponsett.
Huh?
Yeah, I knew who you was. As soon as you rode up to that fire and I got a look at that gun of yours. Britt Ponsett. The fellow they call the six-shooter.
Well, you must have known I was a friend of Dan's. How come you told me all this?
Well, I figure you'll warn him. And that's fine with me. I want him to know. Have time to get scared, you know. Maybe try to run away. I like it if he runs away first. I catch up with him. You tell him that, Ponsett. You tell him Red Lawson's coming to kill him. And ain't nothing he can do about it.
Thanks for the coffee. Easy, boy. Now, Lawson, I reckon Dan won't run. I'll be seeing you. Come on, boy. Come on. That's the trouble with the past. It wasn't only good things in it. It got some bad ones, too. And one of the bad ones was reaching out for Dan and Mary. I didn't know this fellow Lawson. I didn't know what he was talking about, but I did know Dan. And I knew if he killed somebody back there in Texas, it hadn't been murder. It was long about middle of forenoon when I rode up the dirt road between the rows of cottonwoods, turned into the yard. Old hound dog came charging around the side of the house, sounding a lot meaner than he looked. Oh, boy. Wolf star. Here now. Now quit it. Yeah, you don't want to bite anybody. Nice fella. Go on, tell him you got company. Go on, boy. Go on. The place had a good feel to it. Quiet, peaceful. And then I remembered Lawson.
Britt Hunt. Oh, I just can't believe it.
Hiya, Mary. Yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Dan, come on up and see who's here. Hurry. He's been working in the barn fixing up one of the plows. How are you?
Hey, you haven't changed a bit, Mary, unless you're a little prettier than me.
Oh, you're
right.
You're
Hi, Dan.
Son of a gun. You stayed away too long.
Well, things came up, Dan. You know how it is.
Yeah.
You're sure looking good, both of
them. Oh, feeling good, too.
Settling down is what does it, Britt.
Yeah, she took a good saddle man and turned him into a poor plow man. What do you think of that?
That's not true, Dan. We've got the best stand of corn west of the Omaha. What's really great, though, Britt, is peace.
Peace?
No more gunfighting, no range wars. Never known whether Dan would come home sitting up in his saddle or tied onto it. That's all in the past now. Why, Dan doesn't even wear a gun anymore. And that's the way I want it, Britt. It's the kind of life I want from... Oh, have we got a surprise for you.
Oh, well, you know, I... Kind of hard to surprise, you know, you remember?
That's what you think. Come on inside. Now, don't you tell me that. Oh, you'll see, Britt.
Let's see. Good way. One of those newfangled player pianos, is that it?
Oh, no, a piano. That's the most ridiculous guess I ever heard of.
Well, it sure couldn't be anything that
Look.
Well, I'll be darned. I'll be doggone. It's a baby. It's a baby. Well, which kind is it, Mary?
Not it. He. That's young Britt. He'll be a year and a half old next month.
That name was Mary's idea, Britt. I sure wouldn't have wished it on him.
Well, I'll be doggone.
Oh, he's all upset. Hasn't had his nap out. Rich will have to look him over later. You and Dan go on outside now and let me quiet him down.
Oh, sure, Mary. I can't have my namesake all upset.
Are you hungry, Britt?
Oh, I'm always hungry. You know that, Mary.
Good. Got some buttermilk cornbread in the oven. Be ready in a minute.
You know, Britt, Mary's right. This is a good life. I never thought I'd settle down and like it, but I sure have done it.
Yeah, Dan, I guess Mary can't hear us out here, can she?
Oh, she can't hear us. Why, what's the matter, Britt?
I met a fellow on the trail last night, Dan. Name's Red Lawson.
Lawson?
Says you shot his brother in Laredo about 4 years ago.
Lawson. Kurt Lawson. Yeah, I did, Britt. He was one of the Bracken gang, that bunch of rustlers that pulled an ambush on me when I was working for the Circle J Ranch. Well, I guess I better dig out the shooting irons and go after him.
No, wait a minute, Dan.
Wait nothing. He's probably holed up in town. The odds will be better if I go after him instead of waiting for him to come to me.
Yeah, but what about Mary?
Well, that's just it. If I catch him in town, it'll keep him from coming out here. What about her, Britt? What do you mean?
Well, she's happy now, Dan. She figures this kind of thing is all over and done with.
Well, she'll sure find out different if he comes out here gunning for me.
Well, maybe he won't, though. Maybe, Dan, maybe I can do something.
Britt, I've always fought my own battles.
But you've got Mary now. You've got the baby.
And you're a lot faster with a gun than I am. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, Dan. There are just other answers besides killing, that's all. And maybe we can find one. Anyway, we can try, can't we? I saddled up Scarbitt early the next morning and rode into town alone. Figured I'd have a talk with the sheriff. After all, this was his job when you come right down to it. Well,
He wasn't in his office at the county jail. He was out of town for the next 3 days. So I walked down the main street trying to figure out what to do. This wasn't much of a town, Walnut Creek. It's a couple of blocks of clapboard buildings, a boardwalk along the front of them, sheet iron awnings up over, and nothing much stirring but the dogs. Sleepy, quiet, real nice and peaceful for everybody except me.
Rick!
Huh? Oh, Mary.
Well, you were certainly an early bird this morning.
Well, Mary, does Dan know you came into town by yourself?
Well, I don't know, Britt. I come in alone every day or two. Why shouldn't I? Something wrong, Britt?
No. I just wonder, that's all.
Actually, I think he was too busy to notice I'd left. You know what he was doing? Cleaning his guns. You're a bad influence, Britt.
Well,
I think you've started him thinking about things...
Well, Ponset, how about it? You give him my message?
What?
Lawson... Mary, I'll see you later, huh?
Well, all right.
Oh, well, now, there ain't no need of the lady.
No. Goodbye, Mary. I'll see you later, huh?
All right, Britt. If you say so. Giddy up. Come on.
Mary, huh? Dan's wife, maybe. I hear he's got a kid, too.
Yeah, maybe you hear too much, Lawson. And talk too much, too. Maybe you don't ride enough.
Well, I'll ride. Come through here. And I get even.
Yeah, Dan told me about that. Your brother tried to ambush him. He was in with the Bracken gang.
That don't make no difference to me. He was my brother. Dan Mailer was in my place. He might feel the same way. Maybe I'll give him a chance to feel the same way. Now that I know he's got a wife, a kid.
Well, Lawson, if you touch me or
you... Yeah,
kid.
I know. I know all the odds. But once I've done what I come here to do, I don't care what happens afterwards. You, Dan Mailer, can make no move until I do. You see how it stacks up, Ponce? I got all the cards.
He turned his back and he walked off down the street and I stood there watching him go, knowing he was right. He did have all the cards. There was only one thing in the world he wanted. Revenge. And he didn't care what it cost to get it, even his life. Dan and I couldn't move first, and afterwards it'd be too late.
That's the first portion of The Six Shooter. We're spotlighting Jimmy Stewart on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. We'll get back to it after these words. All right, welcome back to the show. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Very proud and happy to be here presenting these classic radio shows. Over a year we've been on the air here on the great Radio 720 WGN.
I'm proud and happy to be here and to be working with you.
Thanks,
as well.
Lisa. Ditto. And we have been saluting Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. You know, Lisa. You know, I can't do him as well as I would like to, but...
I'm not going to touch that one.
That's a really good Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. I have nothing to say here. But we are getting a lot of feedback, and people are loving Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart is great. He did a lot of movies, of course, but also did a lot of radio. And it wasn't hard to pick out three radio shows that he was in. So what we've been doing here on Saturday and Sunday nights is taking a very famous celebrity and... playing three radio shows that they were in. Pretty much every actor of the golden age of movies appeared on radio. And you know why? Because in between movies, it was easy. They didn't have to memorize any lines. They didn't have to wear makeup. They didn't have dress rehearsal. You know, they didn't have to, you know, get into wardrobe.
Right. Something they could do at the same time.
Yeah. They would get paid a good salary to in between films. It was fun, and they kept their craft, you know, honed. So it was a lot of fun, and that's why Humphrey Bogart and Cary Grant and all the big actors did these radio shows. Now, tomorrow night, we have another big movie star. Tomorrow night, we are going to play three classic radio shows with Herbert Marshall. Herbert Marshall, the British actor. The Man Called X, Suspense, and the Screen Guild Theater. That's next week. Or is it, no, is it Herbert Marshall? No, I might have made a mistake. I think I goofed.
You know what it is?
Herbert Marshall last week.
Yes, right. Last week.
Here, I've got it.
We are doing
show 78 is...
Yeah?
Is,
what are the shows?
William Bendis.
Oh, yeah. Life of Riley.
Right. Life of Riley, Suspense, and Burns and Allen.
And Burns and Allen. Yeah, my mistake. Okay, thanks, Lisa. Yeah, William Bendis. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right?
Tomorrow. Almost tonight.
Well, yeah. No. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Sunday.
Tomorrow.
Night. Oh, no.
Yeah. No, okay. We won't do that. All right. So let's get back into this Jimmy Stewart six-shooter broadcast. Let's go back to October 25th, 1953 for Red Lawson's Revenge. Here's the conclusion now of the six-shooter.
Now, Act Two of the six-shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
I found Mary finally at the general store, and I stayed with her while she bought some things, and we headed back to the farm. Just like a woman, she was curious about the fellow I'd stopped to talk with, wondered why I hadn't introduced her. I had a real hard time stalling her off, but I managed to. With Dan, it was different. Are you in there, Dan?
Yeah, come on in, Britt. Been cleaning my guns.
Oh, forget it, Dan. There's better ways.
Yeah? You got one figured?
No. No, not yet. I saw Lawson in town a while ago, Dan.
Huh? You talked to him any?
Yes, I talked to him. I reckon you better stay close to Mary and the boy.
Why? What do you mean? What do you mean, Britt? Did he say anything?
No, not exactly. He saw Mary in town.
Was it dirty?
No, I didn't let him talk to her, Dan. She wondered about it, though. She'll probably ask you later.
That settles it, then. I hadn't even thought of that side of it. Britt, I'm going after him.
You wouldn't have a chance, Dan.
You're selling me kind of short, ain't you?
No, I don't mean it that way. Lawson wouldn't draw even if you called him. That's not what he's after, don't you see? You'd have to kill him in cold blood, and I don't think... You could do that, Dan.
No, I couldn't. Not even Lawson. What are we going to do, Britt?
We waited. We watched. The day passed. No sign of Lawson. Nothing happened. But instead of feeling easier, we just got more keyed up. Mary didn't seem to catch on anything was wrong. Then supper was over and the night started to come on. We just sat around talking while Mary got the baby off to sleep, singing to him and rocking him. The katydid start chirping close. Way off toward the hills, the coyotes took up and answered them. Inside was sort of quiet and gentle.
I think he's finally drifted off.
Yeah. He looks sound asleep.
Just look at him lying there, completely helpless. And so lovable, you could just eat him up.
Well, I suppose he'll get himself some hair and teeth someday. Maybe look a little more human then.
Dan, fine way to talk about your own son.
That's when I heard it. Sound outside. A horse stamped just one or two times. Like somebody was holding too tight a rein on him. Scar and Dan's stock were all in the corral. Over next to the barn. This was right up close to the house. I didn't let on to Mary or Dan.
What's the matter, Britt? You getting restless?
Hmm? No. It's too many years on the trail, I guess. I think maybe I'll amble outside. I get a little fresh air.
Well, watch out for the coyotes, Britt. They grow them big around here. Dangerous, too.
Yeah. I'll keep an eye on it. Coming out of the light that way, as blind as a bat.
I stopped on the porch. I waited a minute so I could get used to the dark and stood there listening to the sounds coming out of the night. The katydids, the coyotes. Then I heard it again. I moved around the corner of the house. It was all quiet. No sign of anybody. I drew fast and fired at the fire. Then I could hear a horse getting away.
Rich! Rich, you all right?
Yeah, Dan. Lost. He got away.
Rick, what in the name of heaven were you trying to do?
Are you all right, Mary?
Small thanks to you if I am. That first shot didn't miss me or the baby by more than 6 inches.
Well, I'm sorry, Mary. There was a coyote out there, and I didn't realize.
Didn't realize? You fool. You might have killed us both, and you didn't realize.
Stop it, Mary. Britt was...
No. No, she's right, Dan. It's my fault. I just didn't think, that's all.
Britt, I think you've worn a gun so long it's beginning to affect your mind.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Look, I think maybe I'll ride into town for a while, if nobody minds. I'm awful sorry, Mary. I'll see you later,
I ought to go with him, Mary.
Why? After a fool trick like that, he ought to be alone. Nobody should be around him. It isn't safe to be.
Oh, you don't understand, Mary. You just don't... Dash. Well, let's go back in the house.
Yeah.
What?
Let's all go back in.
Dan!
Lawson.
Why, you...
Easy, Maynard. You see how it is. Gun ain't pointed at you. One crazy move and your wife will get it. All right. Let's all go inside. Go on, move. Oh. A nice place. Yes, sir. Real nice place. Got a storeroom over there?
Mayor.
Yeah. All right. Get inside, both of you. I said get inside.
Come on, Mary.
Ah. That ought to hold you? Huh?
I stopped. Close car. Whoa, boy. Hold up here. Oh. I could hear him up front. I could hear him. I've heard a lot of horses on the trail. Enough of them to know that this one had an empty saddle on him. I read Lawson hadn't left that farm at all. Come on, boy. Come on, Scar. Anywhere around here. Wonder, Dan? Where's this? Where's that? Dan? Oh, the storeroom. Oh, all right, just a second. Wait till I get this. I'll probably get this door open.
Where is he?
Nobody here.
The baby!
What?
Where's the baby?
I don't know. Dan!
Lawson was here, waited for you to leave and locked us up. He kept coming over to the storeroom door, telling us what he was going to do.
He said he'd burn the house, all kinds of things.
He couldn't have got away. He was here just a minute ago.
And he has the baby.
Rich.
Wait a minute. He's got to come over here to the barn to get the horse, huh? Grab your gun. Come on, Dan.
Stay here, Mary. Don't come out of the house.
He's got the baby. This won't be easy.
I know. I can't figure why he waited. He had all of us. I can't figure it.
Yes, he's waited 3 years. He just wanted to enjoy it, that's all. All right, come on, we better separate. No use making it easy for him.
Right, Bridget. Hold it. Right where you are.
The moon came out from behind the cloud. I could see him now standing right in the barn door, right in the open, like he wasn't afraid of anything. And then I saw why he wasn't afraid. He was holding a gun in his hand, not pointing it at us, though. It was aimed at a little bundle squirming in the hay behind him.
I reckon you can see how things stand. One movement's all over for the kid. All right, Mailer. Drop your gun.
I'm the one you're after, Lawson. All right, you got me. How about leaving Mary and the baby out of it? I killed your brother. They didn't.
Hey, you'd miss him, though, wouldn't you? I guess you'd miss him real bad.
Who are you? You...
Hey, hey. Careful, mate.
Dan just stood there, helpless, hands up in the air. The moon was out full now. I knew I could get a clear sight on Lawson, but I didn't dare to draw and fire. He'd still have time to jerk that trigger. The gun muzzle was about 3 inches from the baby's head.
All right, Ponce. Move on over next to Mayor. I want you both where I can see you. Go on, move.
I walked over and stood beside Dan.
4 years, Mayor. 4 years I've been dreaming about this. Now it's even better than I thought. I didn't know you'd have a family. I didn't know I'd get the six-shooter along with you.
It's our fight, Lawson. Why don't you leave the rest of them out of it?
I had a brother once. 4 for 1 makes a pretty fair payoff.
I kept watching his gun. It was the only chance. If it swerved for 1 second, I'd make a play, but it didn't swerve. And the time was running out. And then I caught something from the corner of my eye. Just the bare flicker of it. It was over at the side of the house. It was Mary. I made my draw.
Lawson! Here!
Why, you... You dropped him, Britt.
I'll make sure, Dan. I know, we've got to make sure.
Oh.
Is that sure enough for you?
Yeah.
Dan, Britt, the baby. Is he all right?
Yeah, he's all right, Mary.
Oh, thank heaven.
Mary, if anybody had told me that you could do what you just did, I...
Dear, no. I don't... Come to Mother. You mean after the way I've always felt about guns, and after you tried to keep all this from me?
Well, I...
Dan told me all about it when we were locked in the storeroom.
Oh, there now, darling, it's all right now.
Britt, I saw what was happening out here, and I remember the rifle, and... Well, after all, I mean, there was nothing else to do. All right now, darling, all right.
About 3 days later, I said goodbye. But I knew I'd be come back that way someday. Dan and Mary aren't just the kind of friends a man forgets. Dan, tough cowpoke from the range country, all settled down and liking it. And not Mary. She was gentle and sweet, and firing at a killer to save her baby's life. And that baby, you know, naming him Britt the way they'd done, you know, that gives you kind of a funny feeling, having a baby named after you. Kind of a good feeling. I figured I'd probably be telling the boys all about that when I got to Wyoming.
The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt. And today's transcribed story was written by Les Crutchfield. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture Thunder Bay. Others in the cast were Shirley Mitchell, Leon Ledoux, Paul Richards, and Barney Phillips. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam. And the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Hal Gibney speaking. Enjoy thrilling historical adventure in Stroke of Fate tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
That is The Six Shooter from October 25th, 1953, with Red Lawson's Revenge, starring Jimmy Stewart, who we are spotlighting on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. We have much more Jimmy Stewart coming your way, but first, these words. All right, hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, 1208. Happy Sunday. And tonight, when we come back here, Lisa, in 20 hours, we are going to have a salute to William Bendix. We'll play a Life of Riley radio episode. Then William Bendix stars in Suspense, and then he's a guest on the Burns and Allen show. Thanks for correcting me early. I really appreciate that.
I have fun.
I needed your help. I had it all wrong.
This is the only thing you need me for, right?
Yeah.
Just to correct.
Yeah, pretty much. No, you're an awesome sidekick. You're, what do they call you? You're, what is it? Second banana?
I don't know. What do they call
second
me?
Second banana. You're my
a lot of people
banana.
Call me different things. Depends who you are.
You're like the Cisco Kids sidekick, which was, Poncho. You like a Poncho.
I'll be your second banana.
I appreciate
it. Do you like bananas?
Appreciate you. I do.
Okay, then
you
we're
like
good.
Bananas.
I would like a banana right now.
Would you like a banana?
I would.
All right.
I like some fruit.
She wants
fruit.
A banana. Yeah, you know
strawberries.
What? It would be good. I didn't have dinner tonight. I'm a little hungry.
If anybody
hungry.
Has strawberries and bananas.
Strawberry bananas.
I like them all cut up, though, in a nice
bowl.
At least
sliced up. Well, Mies Meals would do that for
yes,
us.
Yes, they would.
Yes, they would. All right, so in this hour, we're going to tune into Suspense, a tale well calculated to keep us in suspense, starring Jimmy Stewart. And then in the next hour, we're going to tune into Mr. Stewart in Call Northside 777. A good drama on the Screen Director's Playhouse. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Dave in the romantic comedy Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates because Dave's parents mandate that he attends his sister's wedding in Hawaii with a date.
All right. So if you know who this celebrity is, you can win a Lou Malnati's pizza?
Yep.
All right. $25.
$25.
All right. Gift card. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You will hear a clip now from Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, releasing May 20th. This actor stars in it.
Work's been like a little bit of a bummer, you know. They eliminated the shirtless models, so now I have to walk around in this monkey suit.
Yeah, everyone says I look like this guy, too, you know, Lisa?
Yeah, you guys have a lot of resemblance.
Yeah, we're like the same height, too.
I didn't say it.
That yeah. All right, so if you know who that actor is, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break. Let's play that movie clip again.
Work's been like a little bit of a bummer, you know? They eliminated the shirtless models, so now I have to walk around in this monkey suit.
Hey, Ed from Wheeling, how you doing?
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Ed.
Do you recognize that celebrity's voice?
That is young Zac Efron.
Yes, and I have to ask you, do you think that he resembles Carl Amari?
Yes, right,
Wait,
Ed?
I was talking to Ed.
Yeah, I'm just helping him out.
I'd have to put the pictures next to each other.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. We should do that. I'm going to do that on our Facebook and
see
how that works out.
You would not be able to know which one's Zach and which one is
me. We're going to face swap them and see how that goes. But either way, you are a winner, Ed. You have one $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my personal favorite. And I hope you can check out their menu at loumalnati's.com.
Fantastic.
Thanks
a lot, Ed.
Appreciate you. All right, Lisa, it's time for Suspense. Suspense was on the air a long, long time. We've been trying to play a Suspense almost every week. You know why? Because almost every one of these movie stars appeared on Suspense because it was on the air for 20-plus years, and every single major movie star that I can think of appeared on Suspense.
I wasn't on there.
No, I know. Well,
they missed me.
They missed out on you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Cary Grant, Humphrey Bogart, Jimmy Stewart, as we're going to hear, Bette Davis, Orson Welles, you name it, they were on Suspense. And it was radio's outstanding theater of thrills. They had the best writers. They had the best supporting players. They had the best musicians. I mean, Bernard Herrmann did the music on this show. I mean, Bernard Herrmann was the composer that Orson Welles used all the time, and Alfred Hitchcock used him. And they had the best directors. It was just a top-flight program. As you'll hear on this episode, from May 19th, 1949, this is called Consequence. It stars Jimmy Stewart. Here's part one now of Suspense.
Now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you James Stewart in Consequence, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder. And now, Autolite presents James Stewart in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Maybe the costume was the decisive factor, or maybe it would have happened anyway. In any event, the occasion was the 10th reunion, and the class of 29, as such occasions demand, they were all dressed identically in cowboy suits. And there was Ted Wolf, whom I hadn't seen in 10 years, although in college he'd been by far my closest friend, and so of course I brought him home to dinner. And Gwen managed to be quite charming, even though it was the maid's night out. She didn't even kick about the oven. And that's how it started out. Just like that. Just like any pleasant, casual little evening.
Oh, Gwen, that was a wonderful meal. Last one I'll get like that for a while.
Thank you, sir.
Have you really got to go tonight, Ted? Can't you take a day or so?
Oh, not very well. I got my plane reservations and everything. Anyway, I told him I'd be back this week, and well, tonight's just about the deadline if I'm going to make it.
Well, what time's your plane?
3 a.m. Say, that reminds me, I can't go aboard in this thing.
Oh, you probably will. I think you're both kind of stuck on yourselves in those cowboy outfits. Worse than a couple of kids.
Sure, I'm going to wear mine to the hospital tomorrow.
Oh, fine. No kidding, though. People will think I'm nuts.
All right. Spoil sport. Now, we'll call the hotel later, have them bring your bags over, and you can change here. Although, I would think a cowboy suit would be a sensation in Ecuador.
Ted, are you really going to Ecuador?
Mm-hmm.
First, I thought it must be a joke.
No, you've heard me talk about the work Ted's doing there.
I know, but Ecuador.
Well, they've got to have medical care out on those plantations some way, and well, I like it.
I don't see how you stand it. Living like a hermit, cut off from civilization, not making... Well, I mean, they can't possibly pay you what...
No, Gwen.
What time? Oh, my goodness, I've got to run.
Are you leaving us, Gwen?
I promised Mother I'd come out to the country tonight. Anyway, I know you two would much rather talk over old times by yourselves.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well... Guess I don't see you again. Thanks for everything. It's been swell.
Well, you're coming back sometime, aren't you?
Maybe 5 years, maybe 10, maybe never.
Silly. You come back next year and plan to stay for a while.
Oh, thank you.
I am sorry I have to go, but you two have a nice evening. There are eggs in the icebox, Phil.
Okay.
Did he always have to have fried eggs at night when he was in college, Ted?
Yeah, that's Phil, all right.
Good night, darling. Don't bother coming to the door now. I'll phone you tomorrow night.
Bye, Gwen.
Have a good trip, Ted. Bye.
Goodbye. You're a lucky man, Phil.
Am I?
Well, I suppose you know that the main reason I came to this shindig at all was to see you.
So why me? It's been a long time since you and I had the same dreams, Ted.
Yeah. You haven't lost them, though. You're still in there pitching.
Oh, sure. Yes. Private practice. 2 cars in the garage. 2 chickens in the pot. That's the kind of ball I've been pitching for the last 10 years, and it's the kind I'll keep on pitching until some other doc says coronary thrombosis and they carry me out.
You can't kid me, Phil. You're happy. I'd just about given up the idea that there was such a thing as a happy man.
And now you think you've found one.
Oh, I know I have. I knew it the minute I came into this room. I knew it the minute I saw her.
Gwen?
Yeah, Gwen.
I hate Gwen.
Phil.
And what's more, she hates me. Oh, it's nothing that shows on the surface. We get along because we have to. Because my reputation would suffer if we didn't.
Phil, you can't be serious.
No? Well, why do you think I've given up every dream I've ever had? Why do you think I spend my life treating the imaginary ills of a lot of wealthy hypochondriacs? So Gwen can have this and Gwen can do that. So Gwen can satisfy every greedy instinct and every petty, rotten ambition that any woman ever had.
Lord, I never realized.
Well, that's it.
You've got to do something about it, Phil. You've got to get out. Got to go to another city, go to another country.
Yeah. She'd be after me like a hawk.
She'd have me up before the Medical Association. Oh, there are a thousand things she could do and would do. Oh, I've thought of it every way there is. It's no use. So, it's off my chest. Now you know. And I'm sorry I disillusioned you. Excuse me. Dr. Martin? Oh, well, now? Right. I'll be right down.
You're not going out now. I want to talk to you.
No, well, I'm still a doctor. Even Gwen can't stop that. And I'll be back before you leave, though, and if you want to stick around. I'd so like to ride out the airport
with
you.
Was the call really important, Phil?
Yeah. Yeah, now make yourself at home. Fix yourself anything you want in the kitchen. Only look out for the oven. It leaks when you turn it off just right. And I won't be long.
Okay. I'll wait, Doctor.
Thanks, Doctor. I kind of hoped you would, Ted. That was the second thing. Ted's deciding to stay, but I didn't know it then. All I knew was that Joe had called me from the office and she was upset. Still, I decided to walk. I was upset, too. When I got there, she was going over the accounts. Hello, darling.
Hello. It was nice.
Well, isn't it always?
Always terribly.
Well, what are you doing? Now, there isn't all that rush to get the bills out.
There is, though. For me.
For you?
Uh-huh.
Well, what is it, Joe? What's the matter?
Phil, I had a talk with Father this evening.
Well, something about us?
All about us.
Well, he doesn't know anything. He couldn't. Nobody, unless you told him.
You know I wouldn't do that, Phil.
I'm sorry, darling. I know.
Anyway, it isn't what he knows. It's what he thinks. We had an awful row. He said he'd go to the trustees of the hospital. He said he'd go to Gwen.
He said that?
That's why I'm getting the bills out for you now. Because I'm going away.
But you're going where? Well, how long?
No, darling, it's not going to be like that. It's for good.
Joe,
It's for good, Phil.
Well, Joe, I can't let you go. I know it hasn't been perfect, but I know it's been infinitely worse for you than for me, but at least we've had something. At least I've always known where you are, that you're here on the other side of the door and I could see you and talk to you.
I can't live with a door between us anymore.
Well, maybe you just don't love me enough to... No, darling, I don't mean that.
Phil, I'm not playing noble. This had to happen someday, and it has. And that's all.
I could go with you.
You couldn't do that, Phil.
Well, why not? I could change my name. We could go to another city, even another country. I could get back to research. I could...
Oh, darling... It's no go, Phil.
I asked her for a divorce again this morning.
You don't have to tell me the answer. There is no answer for us, Phil. Not one that we can take. And there we are.
Yeah. Yeah, there we are.
You'd better go now. I've got all this to do.
Well, let me help you.
No.
Well, why not?
I could weaken. And... Then where would we be?
Oh, Joe.
No, Phil, please go.
Joe.
Please. Please, please.
All right, I'll go. I don't know how long I walked that night or where. Perhaps most men are weak and never know it. But when you're losing the woman you think you love, that's when you'll find out. That's when you'll see yourself at last in the pitiless glare of all your poor, frightened, childish helplessness. And I walked along, and I was sick to the depths of my soul. And I walked some more. I don't know, somewhere in the distance I heard a siren. There was a glow against the sky, a fire. And then I... realized I was near my home, and then it wasn't just a glow against the sky of any fire. It was my own house. It burned almost to the ground.
And this is terrible. How did it happen?
Somebody said they think it was the gas stove.
Stunned and confused, I began edging through the crowd. And then there was a sudden stillness, and a few men took off their hats. And then I saw it. A stretcher, and the blanket thrown over the shapeless form, and the blackened, shriveled cowboy boot. And I remembered. Ted... Ted had been in that house.
They just got him out now.
Yeah, what's left of him?
They say you wouldn't hardly know it was a man.
Frantically, I started forward, and then I stopped. because I thought somebody had spoken to me, but they hadn't. They weren't looking at me. They were looking at the ground and the stretcher and that thing that lay there on it.
Dr. Philip Martin.
Yeah, I knew him. He was a good man.
Oh, poor Dr. Martin. What an awful way to die.
Suddenly I was shaking with excitement. I pulled my hat down over my eyes. I turned up my collar and I moved carefully back through the crowd out into the street and I turned the corner and then I ran. Joe!
Phil!
Joe, I'm going with you.
Phil, you haven't...
Oh, it's all right. It's all right, Joe. I'll tell you later. But we're free, Joe. We're free. I'm dead. I mean, Dr. Philip Martin, he's dead.
For suspense, Autolite is bringing you James Stewart in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
There's the voice of Boris Badenoff right there. Paul Frees as the announcer. And Jimmy Stewart starring in Consequence is heard on Suspense. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Carl, Shane, yes. And I put our forces together and we posted a picture on Facebook. I think we found your doppelganger. Is that right?
My doppelganger? So it's a picture of me. And who else?
Well, they're going to have to check the Facebook. We found your twin.
Okay.
You guys
look... Is he a famous person?
Well, we talked about it earlier. It's Zac Efron.
Oh, right.
And Shane put this little photo thing together, and I posted it. And I think Shane and I agree that you guys look exactly alike. You're almost can't even tell the difference between the two of you.
But right, Shane? There it is. But in all fairness, it's a younger picture of me, right? It was back when I was about 20-something.
I think it was. I think the copyright said yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It looked like a selfie.
Right, a selfie.
So just go to WGN Radio Theater on Facebook. Just search that, and you'll see a picture of me and Zach.
And while you're there, you guys are welcome to like us and post any comments or suggestions. Really, I do love to hear from everyone.
Who wants to win a year's supply?
Jesus.
What's this? This is pretty cool. It's like this is like
Rock Boys.
Right. Cool. I like this. Very cool. Shane always picks great music. Shane's into music,
he's
man.
He's young. He's got this is like young music.
I want to drive around in your car and listen to the songs you picked out.
I don't have a car.
I was going to say, do you have a car?
I work part-time at WGN.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
All right. Let's pitch in.
I don't have a car either. I work part-time at WGN.
Lisa's dad could buy you a car.
You get on the back of my motorcycle. We'll drive on Lakeshore.
That sounds like a plan.
Lisa, a selfie stick. And
yeah. Lisa's dad gives out, would you get a convertible Bentley recently from your dad?
No, I got the Lamborghini.
The Lamborghini.
New model, whatever that
one
is.
Yeah.
Was that the one he was going to give to Goodwill?
Yeah, he just decided to give it. It had a tiny little scratch on the...
Yeah, I don't like scratches. It's got to be just
fender.
Perfect.
But
yeah.
Who wants to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter? Folks, if you're out there and you have a kitty cat, you would love to have Cat's Pride kitty litter in your home. And how about a year's supply of it? Right, Lisa?
Right. If you have a cat or you know someone who has a cat or you want to buy a cat, this is the perfect thing for you.
If you win, you'll have to go buy a cat.
That's right. So it's perfect. What we need is a picture of you and your cat. And if you're shy and you don't want to put yourself in the picture, that's okay. Just your cat is fine, too. We just want to see everybody's cats and see how cute they are and share in your pride and joy. Send that picture to Cat's Pride Photo @gmail.com, and we need your name, your cat's name, your city and state. At the end of each month, including this month, May, Dan Jaffe, CEO of Cat's Pride, will be here to pick one lucky winner. Mike will post this on Facebook, and we want to give this to you because we have done our research, and we know that Cat's Pride is the top kitty litter on the market, and we want to share this with you. We want you to try it.
Right. Absolutely. Not only is it the best kitty litter, it's also the lightest because
they have their new Fresh and Light Ultimate
Care. Fresh and Light.
Comes in the green jug. It's got Katherine Heigl on it. She is their new spokesperson, and she truly believes in Cat's Pride, and she's an animal lover. What is it, the Jason...
Jason DeBris Heigl Foundation.
Jason DeBris Heigl Foundation.
What happens is that every single jug of Cat's Pride that is sold, a portion of the proceeds goes to help save cats and dogs across the country.
Right. So it's a good...
Yeah, it's a great cause. And you can win a year's supply. Just send a picture of you and your cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. It'll get posted, and Dan Jaffe will be here later this month. So send it in. Don't forget, right?
Right. Last Sunday of the month.
All right. Here we go with the conclusion now. Jimmy Stewart in Consequence on Suspense.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage James Stewart as Phil in Consequence, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
There must be something of the criminal in every man, because it seemed that I knew automatically everything I would have to do and how I was going to do it.
Hotel Wilton.
Dr. Wolf, please. Dr. Theodore Wolf.
Thank you. I'm sorry, sir. Dr. Wolf doesn't answer.
Oh. Well, say, what's the number of his room again? I want to drop him a note.
Dr. Wolf is in 502.
502. Thank you very much. I knew in a big hotel like that, the chance of anyone remembering exactly what Ted had looked like would be pretty slim. And I figured they'd give me the key all right, as long as I didn't have to stumble around asking for the number. I let myself into 502 and snapped on the light. I found the plane tickets on the bureau. Then I pried open his luggage and changed into one of his suits. Put on his hat and overcoat just in case. Packed my own things away. There was a pair of dark glasses on the bureau, too. I put them on. Then I went downstairs, checked out, paying cash. I knew he'd bought the plane tickets at the airport and that the travel clerk in the hotel wouldn't know Ted Wolf from Adam.
Yes, sir?
I'm Dr. Wolf. I've been staying here at the hotel.
Oh, yes, doctor.
I have a through plane ticket here to Ecuador, Pan American, for tonight. I want to turn it in.
Now, one moment, sir. That's Dr.
Dr. Theodore Wolf.
Pan American? Wilton Hotel. Got a through ticket to Ecuador. Dr. Wolf. Would you take it? Thank you. All right. That will be quite all right, Dr. Wolf.
And while we're at it, you might as well give me a couple of train tickets.
Yes, sir. Where to?
Huh?
I said, where to, sir?
Los Angeles. We'd taken care of everything. A note to my bank, supposedly from Ted, enclosing Philip Martin's check for $5,000. And a letter in my own handwriting explaining that I'd agreed to lend him that amount and asking the bank to forward the money to my account in Los Angeles, my account as Ted Wolf. And we drafted a letter to the people in Ecuador, and in Los Angeles, Joe became Mrs. Ted Wolf. And at first, everything clicked. I got the kind of a job a doctor dreams about, where I could write my own ticket and spend at least half my time entirely on research. And Joe started taking courses for a medical degree. After all, she was only 24. And then, right there, right in broad daylight in the hospital, it happened.
Hello?
Joe. Joe, pack a bag as quick as you can, just enough for 2 or 3 days in the mountains. Now, just as fast as you can.
Phil?
It's Gwen. I saw her just now upstairs in the reception room.
Gwen, are you sure? Absolutely sure? Couldn't it be just a coincidence, Phil? I mean, couldn't Gwen maybe just have happened?
Maybe. Listen, Joe, I've been thinking.
She mustn't know where we go.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe it would be better if she did know where we were going.
If she didn't?
I don't know. It may just be a coincidence. But if it is a showdown, the mountains is a better place than most.
All right.
I'll phone the landlady.
Is that safe?
Yeah, Gwen won't talk, not until she's sure.
Carlton Apartments, Mrs. Burton.
Hello, Mrs. Burton. This is Dr. Wolf. I wonder if you'd do me a favor.
Why, I'd be glad to, Dr. Wolf.
We're going out of town for a couple of days, and I just remembered some friends said they might stop by, and I thought they might like to join us, so I wanted them to know where we were.
All right, sir.
Now, maybe you could just stick a note in our door where they'll see it. We're going to Caribou Lake, and we'll be on the cottage at the very top of the mountain. It's right straight up a dirt road from the lake. They can't miss it.
Caribou Lake, the cottage at the top of the mountain, up the dirt road from the lake. Is that all?
Yes, thank you, Miss Burton. That's all. Thank you. Caribou Lake is nothing more than a general store where you can buy bait, hire boats, and cottages. That time of year, there's hardly anybody there except the people who own the store. And the cottage we had was a good 3 miles away up a twisting dirt road running above the lake. But you could see it very plain, even at night when the lights are on. We stopped in the store and both went in to buy what we needed, food, kerosene, matches, things like that. Then we went on up the mountain. By that time, it was almost dark, and Joe fixed something to eat, but neither of us could touch it. We were watching the road for lights of a car. It was about 8:30 when we saw them. And we went on past the store without stopping and came on up the mountain. It couldn't have been anyone else but Gwen.
Well?
Yeah, she didn't waste any time.
What if the car is rented?
Oh, she'd bring her own. She loves to drive.
Phil, you're not afraid, are you?
No. No, not anymore. I'll go.
Well, this is a surprise.
Hello, Gwen.
Dr. Martin, always poised. Nothing surprises you, does it?
I suppose it was the check.
Partly. Then I happened to notice that a Dr. Theodore Wolfe had married a Miss Josephine Reynolds in Los Angeles. It did occur to me that your idealistic friend must have been an awfully fast worker. Well, aren't you and your bride going to ask me in?
Come in, Mrs. Martin.
Thank you. Quite cozy, aren't you?
We have been.
Well, I'm sorry to break up your little...
All right, cut it out, Gwen. Now, what do you want?
Why, my dear man, what do you think I want?
And the way things are now, you've got $200,000 worth of life insurance coming to you. Why don't you let us alone?
Philip, I don't know whether you realize how much worry and anguish you've caused me.
Sure, I know. I know. I know just exactly how much.
And perhaps you also know exactly how you stand with the law in this matter. I don't know about all this impersonation business, except it would permanently ruin your career. But I do know that the laws covering bigamy are quite drastic.
Yeah, I used to think that money meant everything to you, Gwen. But I guess it doesn't, does it?
I certainly don't feel called upon to accept rebukes from you, Philip, for anything. Not after what you've done. I feel that I'm being most generous to both of you.
All right, now, just what exactly do you want, Gwen?
Either you come back and we'll explain the whole thing as amnesia or something, or you both go to jail.
How could you
shut
up? Now, listen. Just a minute. Listen, Gwen. Does anybody else know about this?
Of course not.
Nobody knows you came out here, or why?
After all, Philip, I do have some pride left. Just that I was taking a little trip to New York to forget.
New York, huh? All right, Gwen. Just give us a couple of minutes to talk this thing over, will you? Alone?
Very well. Although I don't see there's very much to talk about.
Will you go outside or shall we?
I'll go. I'll wait in the car.
Oh, Phil.
It's all right, Joe. I don't mind now.
Neither do I.
Do you think you can do it?
Me?
I'll have to have an alibi.
Have you thought?
I've thought about it. Thought about it all day. And it's all right. It's good. She'll disappear the same way I did.
A fire?
Yeah. Only I'll have to be down at the store when it happens. This place will go up like kindling. And when they pull her out, they'll think it's you. Nobody knows she's up here. And I'll be there to say it is you.
How are you going to...
I've got it all fixed in the cellar. All you have to do is... Here. Use this hatchet. Can you?
Yes. I will.
And then go out to the car and get on the floor of the back seat, under the blanket, lock it from the inside. I'll probably get away right afterwards.
All right, Phil.
I'll see you in the car, and the whole thing shouldn't take more than a couple of hours.
Phil, you're not afraid?
Are you?
No. I'm glad.
Gwen?
Yes?
Come on in.
Have you decided?
Yes. Well, you might as well eat with us. There'll be quite a few details to talk over.
I'm not sure I feel much like eating in this house, Philip.
Yes, well, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to start back hungry. Give me the keys to your car, will you? It's blocking mine, and I'll go down the hill and get a few things for dinner.
Really, Philip?
Oh, will you please stop griping? You've won. Now, give me the keys.
Very well. But I wouldn't try any mad dashes if I were you.
Oh, well, don't be a fool, Gwen.
No, I don't suppose you would. Alone?
She went in. I took the keys, but first I went around back down the cellar. I put a lot of old newspapers around the wood pile and doused the whole thing with kerosene. And then I cut a stub of plumber's candle and set it on the papers and lit it. I knew just about how long it'd take the candle to burn down, about 45 minutes. Then I went out and I got in Gwen's car and I started on the mountain without lights. At the drop above the lake, I put it in low and I cramped the wheels and I jumped out. About 40 feet of water. Unless somebody told them where to look, they'd never find the car. All that hadn't taken more than 15 minutes. The walk down to the store took about 20 more.
Well, forget something, Dr. Wolf?
Yeah, like a fool. I forgot my tobacco. I can't get through the night without a pipe.
No, just how it is. Walk down?
Yeah, working up on an appetite, you know.
Here you are. You folks have callers tonight?
No. Why?
I thought I saw a car go up your way a while back.
Oh, I saw the lights, but they didn't come up. Somebody must have made the wrong turn. Didn't they come back?
I don't know. I was out for a spell. You see that car come back by, Daisy?
Oh, you must have seen it, all right. It was about an hour ago.
Seems like I did hear a car about that.
Sure, that was it.
Yep, pretty sure I did.
Mrs. Dooley don't always see so good, but she hears plenty. Hey, Ma?
Pa, looky here. Huh? Pa, look it up there. Looks like a fire.
Say, it is. It is a fire. Golly, Doc, that looks like your place.
Well, it couldn't be. But it must be.
Big, too. We better get up there, too.
Do you have your car?
We'll go in the truck. It's right outside. The boys can bring Ma along in the car. You hear that, Ma?
Yeah. Len!
Come on,
Johnny,
Doc.
Get off the car.
I sure hope everything's all right.
And so do I. Cottage was all wood and dry, and it was completely gone by the time we got there. It was the boys who dragged her out of the embers.
I wouldn't look if I was you, Doctor.
Oh,
must have been quick anyway.
Joe.
She's burnt almost to nothing.
You better go on, Doc. We'll take charge of everything.
All right.
Do you want one of the boys to go with you?
No. I'll get in touch with you from town. I'll make the arrangements down there, and I'll send down...
Sure. You go on. We'll see to everything.
All right.
Oh, I'm awful sorry, Dr. Wolf.
I climbed into the car, and I started down the mountain. When I was around the first bend, I pulled up and stopped. I reached over with one hand and touched the blanket on the floor behind me. Are you all right, Joe?
Yes, Philip. I'm quite all right.
Gwen. Gwen has never told me how it happened, but of course she killed Joe. We both killed her. And now I know that I'm trapped. I'm hopelessly, irrevocably trapped by the terrible burden of guilt we share between us, as she is. I know now that two people held together by such a frightful bond cannot both go on living. For that bond can be broken in only one way. One of the two must die. And so I write this and place it in the hands of my attorney for safekeeping in order that the true facts be brought to light in the event of such a death. For no matter how innocent it may appear, no matter how natural the cause, how plausible the accident, it will be no accident. It will be murder. Cold-blooded, calculated, deliberate murder.
And now, the local news. Dr. Philip Martin, who has been in poor health for the past 3 months while recovering from an attack of amnesia, died today in his home from an overdose of sleeping sedative. He is survived by his widow, Mrs. Gwen Martin.
thank you, James Stewart, for a splendid performance. And now here again is Mr. James Stewart.
Well, I want to thank Tony Litter and his great cast of actors for making my suspense visit so pleasant. I'm a great suspense fan, and like all of you, I'm looking forward to next week's show when Frederick March appears in Cornell Woolrich's story, The Night Reveals, another gripping study in...
suspense.
James Stewart can currently be seen starred in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, The Stratton Story. Tonight's suspense play was adapted for radio by Robert Richards from an original story by Vladimir Posner and George Sklar, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Leith Stevens. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. Next Thursday, same time, hear Frederick March in The Night Reveals.
Resistor spark plugs, Autolite Stayful batteries, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Terrific tale of suspense called Consequence, starring Jimmy Stewart, sponsored by Autolite. I don't know, is Autolite around anymore?
I don't think so. What a great, memorable voice she has.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Autolite girl.
Yeah, we have to see if Autolite is still around. All right, suspense, hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Got it, Lisa?
I got it. What do I got?
That pot needs to be cleaned, don't you think? That that fader makes it a little... every time we... yeah. We got to get that thing fixed. Right, Shane?
Yeah. Shane's like, yeah, whatever you say, Carl.
Steph sent me an email earlier. She wanted Lisa to do it after the show.
Yeah, Lisa, yeah, could you stick around?
You know what? I don't have enough jobs. I'm just going to add one more. Yeah, while David's here, I'm going to work on it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
It's called a dirty pot. That's what they call it in the radio biz.
Sooner the better.
When I was first got on the radio, you know, have you ever heard of this, Shane? I'm much older than you, but when I first got into the radio business, I used to cut tape.
Sure, you know, yeah, with like an X-Acto knife on a reel-to-reel.
I used to use a, not an X-Acto knife, but I used to use a
like
razor
blade.
Yeah,
like
a little razor blade. Yeah. And I used to have reel-to-reel tape recorders, and sure. I would record myself and listen back. And then say, oh, I'm not good. I'm going to edit out something. And I'd literally splice the tape.
Yeah.
And then I had those. I had Amex reel-to-reel decks way back when. Yeah. And it's all changed now. It's all in the digital world.
The hipsters of Logan Square are now converting only to reel-to-reel.
Ah,
so all their music, they play reel-to-reel.
Reel-to-reel. Very
sounds
cool.
Great.
Funny.
Very, very cool. Lisa had an 8-track player. What did you have when you first got cassette tape?
No, just a little cassette player.
Little realistic
little Radio Shack thing. You push play and record at the same time.
She used to walk around and talk into it, right?
Yeah,
I could see you doing
that. That's what I did.
You should post a picture. Do you have a picture of you doing that?
I don't. Not that I could find. But here's the other thing. When I would call up the radio stations, and then they would... either my voice would be on it or they would say my name. I would set the recorder up so that I could listen to the
them
radio.
Saying your name.
Say my name. I mean, like, to me, that was just life in itself.
Hey, this radio station,
yeah,
Lisa Wolf.
No, it wasn't Lisa Wolf then.
Oh, Lisa Metanke. Good old Lisa Metanke won. She won.
She won.
Yeah, she won a whatever.
Whatever.
A $5 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza.
Oh, God. To me, that was just life in itself to be a winner.
And here you are on the biggest station in the whole world. On
the whole world.
In the whole world, WGN Radio.
It feels like the biggest station in the whole world when we're here.
It's one of the biggest stations in the entire world. And you're on it. You have a radio show on it, Lisa.
Well, I'm feeling pretty lucky to be here, no doubt.
Playing classic radio shows. That's what we do here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. We're spotlighting Jimmy Stewart on this edition. And in just a few minutes, we're going to tune into the Screen Director's Playhouse with Call Northside 777, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor has a cameo appearance in the upcoming supernatural comedy Ghostbusters, a reboot of the Ghostbusters franchise.
All righty. The number to call, 312 312- 877-981-7200. Now, you will hear this actor co-starring with Jim Belushi in 1981's Neighbors.
Drugs. I can tell. That spaced outlook. I used to see it all the time in those dust cases the state police would bring in when I was night custody chief at Oakville Metal.
All right, if you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. You'll win a pizza?
Yeah, or a gift certificate for Lou Malnati's pizza, pasta, whatever you like.
All right, we'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl and Lisa and Shane and Roger, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Drugs. I can tell. That spaced outlook. I used to see it all the time in those dust cases the state police would bring in when I was night custody chief at Oakville Metal.
Hi, Rosa. How are you?
Hello. How are you guys?
We're great. Good to hear from you. We're hoping you can help us out and tell us whose voice that is.
Dan Aykroyd.
You are right. He's just plain funny. You are a winner, Rosa. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. I hope you love pizza half as much as I do. You will love Lou Malnati's, and you can check out their menu at loumalnati's.com.
Thank you, guys. You're great.
Thanks, Rosa.
Okay. You know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
Adapting hit movies for radio airplay was big business back in the 1940s, as evidenced by the Lux Radio Theater, Screen Guild Theater, and usually one or two of the film stars reprised their roles on the Screen Director's Playhouse. But the difference with the Screen Director's Playhouse was that there was an added element of director participation. The actual director of the film was invited backstage and also on the air to talk about the making of the picture. And these were cool. These were radio adaptations of motion pictures. And this one, Call Northside 777, Jimmy Stewart reprised his role in the movie. This is a radio broadcast from December 9th, 1949. Here's part one now of the Screen Director's Playhouse.
From Hollywood, the Screen Director's Playhouse. Screen Director's Playhouse, star Jimmy Stewart, production Call Northside 777, director Henry Hathaway. The Hollywood Screen Directors present a document on murder. A motion picture drama, Call Northside 777, starring Jimmy Stewart in his original role of McNeil. This is a true story. Its first chapter was written in blood in the turbulent Chicago of 1932. December 9th, on South Ashland Avenue, in a place operated by a woman named Wanda Skutnik. The sign in front of her place said groceries and delicatessen, but that was just the front for a speakeasy.
Wanda, you're looking at a cop with a cold coming on.
Come in the back room, Wanda. I'll fix you up with a drink.
That wind out there cuts like a knife.
Yeah.
I can pour my own if you got something to do, Wanda. You got customers. Hey, two men.
Yeah. They got their faces covered.
It's a stick-up. Wanda, Wanda.
Officer Bundy lay dead, the eighth policeman killed that year. Several days later, the police received a tip that pointed suspicion toward a man named Tomek Zaleska. It was discovered that Zaleska had spent the night of the murder with a friend, Frank Wiecek. Both suspects, Wiecek and Zaleska, were swiftly brought to trial.
Mrs. Skutnik, you have already identified Tomek Zaleska as one of the men who murdered policeman John Bundy. Do you see in this courtroom the other man who took part in the shooting?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Over there, him.
No!
Frank Wiecek.
No, that's not true!
Had you ever seen Wiecek prior to the shooting?
No.
Then the first time you saw him was at the time of the murder?
Yeah.
That's all. Your Honor, the people rest.
Frank Wiechek and Tomek Zaleska were sentenced to 99 years in Stateville Penitentiary. Our story now concerns only Frank Wiechek. His case was forgotten for 11 years, forgotten until October 10, 1944, when a small advertisement appeared in the Chicago Times and found its way to the desk of Brian Kelly, the city editor.
Read this ad, McNeil. It appeared in our morning edition.
$5,000 reward for the killers of Officer Bundy on December 9th, 1932. Call Northside 777. What do you make of it?
I just want to know why it's worth $5,000 to somebody to find out who killed a cop 11 years ago.
Well, 1932 was open season on cops, Kelly. On the north side, they were shooting them in pairs like a brace of ducks.
Well, it won't hurt to check it. Might even get your name in the papers.
Oh, well, this is sucker bait, this ad. Every grifter in town will be out after that $5,000. Frame their brothers to get it. Now, what? Wait a minute, no. Now, maybe this ad is a frame. Hey, there's a lot of angles to it.
See what I mean? Just takes you longer to catch on. Follow it up.
I'm looking for Tilly Wiechek.
What's your one?
Well, I called Northside 777. They said I'd find her around the building somewhere.
I'm Tilly. I scrub here nights.
Oh, I see. Did you run this ad?
Yeah. That's from me. You know something?
No, I'm a reporter from the Chicago Times.
Oh.
We'd like to know why you're so anxious to find the killers of this cop.
Frank Wiechek is my son. I his mother. He's in prison for killing policemen. He didn't do it. My friends tell me if I offer big money, maybe somebody will tell who really killed policemen.
Where'd you get the $5,000?
For 11 years, I scrubbed floors. I never miss day's work. I earn it every penny.
11 years. That's a long time.
You just say it. My boy, he live it.
You're just gonna be wasting your money.
No, not me. I get Frank out someday, somehow. First, I try $3,000. Nothing. Now I try $5,000.
I suppose nothing happened.
Then I work 11 more years. I get $10,000. But my boy, Frank, someday he get out.
Now you buy, Miss Wiechek.
That yarn you wrote on the scrub woman's a good one, Mac. It's got size. Elderly scrub woman slaves to clear son of 11-year-old murder charge.
I remember the story, Kelly. You don't have to read it to me.
Yeah, it's too good for a one-day story. Why don't you go up to Stateville and interview her son?
Now, wait a minute now. I didn't play up that angle just to glorify a cop killer.
You got proof he is a cop killer?
Well, they didn't send him to the penitentiary for 99 years for playing hooky. Look, I read the file on this case, Kelly. Now, the kid killed a cop and he got what was coming to him.
Mac, look, let's put it this way. I'm interested for personal reasons. My mother did the same thing. Scrubbed floors on hands and knees for more than 11 years to send me through school.
Okay. I'll go up to the pen in the morning, Sam.
Good boy.
Kelly.
What?
I happen to know that your mother had a small annuity. She never scrubbed a floor in her life, and you never got past the fifth grade.
Well,
But I figured if you pull such a corny gag, you must want me to go up there pretty bad, so I'm going. I just don't want you to think you got away with anything.
We
Wiecheck, the Times is taking an interest in your case. I'd like more of your side of things. I need an angle to hit the public with. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Now, about the ad your mother ran in the papers. Now, did you know she was scrubbing floors, got the money?
Yes, sir, I did. All she lives for is to get me out. I guess that's all I've got to live for, too.
Well, that's a great angle. We'll play that up. Your faith in each other, huh? You know, if you're guilty, you're letting her slave away her life for nothing.
She knows I'm not guilty.
Uh-huh. I read the transcript of the trial, you know.
Yes, but you only read what convicted me. All the true facts didn't come out. Even Judge Moulton said I wasn't guilty.
What, the judge who gave you 99 years?
That's right. In his chambers after the trial. He said to me...
After the trial. Uh-huh. Well, we better duck that angle. What else?
Well, my lawyer was a drunk. He didn't even let me on the stand because he was afraid I'd get the chair.
Why?
Well, when they question you hour after hour, you're bound to get mixed up on little things the way I did, but... They wouldn't listen to me.
That's not a good angle. Railroaded.
Well, they took me from one police station to another every few hours. Taking you around the horn, they call it, so my lawyer couldn't get me out. Then this Wanda Skutnik. The first two times she saw me, she said I wasn't the guy. Then all of a sudden she said I was. Why?
Finger woman. Ah, well, play that up, too. Speaking of women, how about your wife? She visits you regularly?
My wife? Yes. Yes, but we're divorced.
Oh, I see. Well, maybe we better duck that angle, too.
Now, you duck so many things. You don't believe me, do you?
Here's what we'll do. We'll play up the mother angle and this finger woman. Maybe throw in some police and political corruption.
I didn't say that.
Oh, what difference does it make? Make a good story. And it could be true, you know. We've got to have soft mass appeal, get public sympathy and public support. You leave it to me.
I see. Well, thank you, Mr. McNeil. Thank you for coming to see me.
It's a great story, Mac, but what are you going to use for a follow-up?
Now, look, Kelly, I did what you told me. I interviewed Wiecheck, I wrote it up. Now, let it drop.
It's snowballing, Mac. They want more of it.
You know, who does? The circulation department? We're selling lots of papers. Yeah, we might also be selling that dead cop short. Maybe he had a mother who scrubbed floors, too.
Look, Mac, I...
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else. That judge Wiecheck said promised him a new trial? Yeah, well, he died 3 weeks before the case, after the case was closed. Pretty smart of that Wiecheck to give me a lead he knew I could never check.
Okay, Mac, okay. If you're so sure the guy's guilty, there's nothing more to the story than end it. Write a finished piece and kill it.
I'll take that deal. I'll interview his wife. She believed in him so much she got a divorce. Yeah, I'll interview her. I'll write a story and that'll kill it for keeps, Mr. Kelly. Got any idea why Wiecheck wanted to see me again, Warden?
I think I'd better let him tell you that.
Oh, Wiecheck, what's on your mind?
Mr. McNeil, you've been to see my wife and boy, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want you to write any more about me or my family.
Well, you want help, don't you?
I made my wife divorce me and marry again so my boy could have a new name. Now, you've gone and printed his picture. You've spoiled everything for him. Now everyone knows his father's a convict.
I don't know. I thought I was doing a good job.
No, this is writing without heart and without truth. Mr. McNeil, I'll stay here 1,000 years, but you will leave alone my mother and my wife and my boy.
Well, how about that?
I've read all you've written, and I think you've hit some pretty low curves.
Oh, I wrote it the way I saw it. What's the matter? Everybody goes soft on this thing.
McNeil, up here every man claims to be innocent, but the prisoners are the harshest judges of themselves, and they believe we have only one man who doesn't belong here. Frank Wiecheck.
Okay. Okay, Warden. Oh, Wiecheck, would you come back here a minute?
What do you want?
Look, Frank, I've decided to Go on with your case, and I'll slant the story your way.
And what?
I still don't think you're innocent, but from here on out, I'm willing to dig. Get the facts.
You're really on the level this time?
Yeah. But that cuts both ways, so get this. If I ever catch you lying to me, I'll blast you so hard you won't even get your parole when your 35 years are up. Now, don't ever forget that.
You are listening to the Screen Directors Playhouse production of Call Northside 777, starring Jimmy Stewart.
All right, let's take a break. We'll get back to that program after these words. All right, I want to remind all of our listeners, there's that dirty pot again.
I'm as soon as the show's over, I'm going to get my rag and my sprays and get on it.
I asked her to come in here during that last show, and she just kind of gave me the finger.
I know.
It was the worst.
That's nothing. You should see. Oh, my gosh. That's not bad at all.
No, she was just indicating it was on pot one.
Yeah, pot one. Yeah.
Pot three.
One, now, Lisa, I do want to remind you, there are plenty of webcams in here, and
that's
people
right.
do
yeah.
watch the show.
This is
so
true.
Okay.
Yeah, but they know I'm fooling around.
Of course.
I want to remind our listeners, we have a Facebook page. Just hop on Facebook and search us at WGN Radio Theater. And also, if you want to go to our website, we have a website at WGNRadiotheater.com. And at the website, our full schedule, all of the shows that we air here on WGN Radio Theater are listed there. And if you want to suggest something that you'd like to hear, just do that through Facebook, or you can text us at 312-981-7200. But right now, let's tune in to the conclusion of Call Northside 777, starring Jimmy Stewart on the Screen Directors Playhouse.
Are you sure you want to go through with this lie detector test, Frank? Remember now, if it turns out bad, you're cooked. Turns out good, it still isn't legal evidence.
Mr. McNeil, for 11 years I've been waiting for a chance at that box. I'll take the test.
Frank Wiechek passes lie test. Yeah? Okay, Mac, what now?
Well, now I start checking through old police records.
That won't be easy.
Yeah, you're telling me. Political corruption seen in Wiechek case. The state's attorney's office today endeavored to stop this investigator from examining police records behind the conviction of Frank Wiechek. Wonder why the boss sent for us, Kelly.
Mr. Palmer? Yeah, I got a pretty good idea, Mac. This last article of yours on political corruption in the Wiechek case, you hit them pretty hard.
Yeah, I haven't begun to swing yet. They've obstructed me all along the line. But I finally found what I was looking for on the police records.
Huh?
Wiechek was arrested on December the 22nd, but he wasn't booked until the 23rd. Now, Wanda Skutnik could have seen him a couple of times before she identified him on the 23rd.
Oh, here we are.
Kelly McNeil, you know my attorney, Burns.
How do you do?
What is it, Burns? How are you?
I've just had a visit from a delegation, gentlemen. The commissioner, Mr. Faxton from the state attorney, and Mr. Winston from the governor. They object to our handling of the Wiechek case.
Oh, Mr. Palmer, Wiechek is innocent.
They say it's time for us to put up or shut up. The governor's going to set up a special hearing of the pardon board next week. If we can prove Wiechek innocent, he'll get a pardon. If not, we're to drop this whole matter once and for all. I accepted the deal. But my attorney, Burns, here, thinks it was a bad one.
McNeil, I'm an attorney. I know what it's like to go up before the pardon board. They're not interested in lie detector tests. They want facts.
Okay, I'll give you something better than facts. Here's a picture I dug out of our files.
Picture?
Yeah. Wanda Skutnik testified she didn't see Wiechek from the time of the murder until she identified him on December 23rd. But this picture shows a cop taking Wiechek into the New City Station. And with them is Wanda Skutnik.
When was this taken?
Well, on the 22nd of December, obviously. That's the day they were taking Wheatcheck from station to station.
Now, look, McNeil, you can't just say that obviously it was taken the 22nd. You have to prove it.
But obviously it is.
It could easily have been taken after she identified him on December 23rd. The law of the state of Illinois requires only one eyewitness for an identification and conviction. So far, that witness, Wanda Skutnik, has not retracted her testimony. And unless you can make a liar out of her, you've got no case.
You mean we'd better get off the hook, Burns, huh?
Yes, I do.
What about it, McNeil? Want to give up?
No, I don't. No, Wheatcheck is innocent. Now, I know that beyond any doubt. It's true I haven't found the key witness, Wanda Skutnik. I haven't cracked her testimony. But I want a chance to find her. I want a chance to get Wheatcheck out. Now, if we call off this hearing, we'll never get another.
The bargain stands.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. That gives me just 1 week to find Wanda Skutnik. I'll call in every day. Mr. Palmer? McNeil? No luck today. I'll call you tomorrow. I covered 34 bars today. Got nothing. Well, still no sign of Wanda Skutnik. Never heard of Wanda Skutnik, huh? Thanks anyway, bartender.
Hey, mister.
Huh?
Your name McNeil?
Yeah, why?
I've been reading your stories. I wondered when you'd hit this neighborhood.
You know where Wanda Skutnik is?
What's in it for me?
What do you want?
I owe the bartender $1.75.
Here, take it out of this.
She hadn't ought to thrown them bricks at me.
Where is she?
3724 Honor Street. Only her name is Siskovich now. She married a big ape called Boris.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Come in! Come in!
Who are you?
I'm from the Times. My name is...
Get out of here.
You're Wanda Skutnik.
Get out. You're wasting your time.
The first two times you saw Wheatcheck, you couldn't identify him. What made you change your mind?
Get out. I'm not changing my testimony.
Will you take a lie test?
Do you think I'm crazy? I got no reason to help Wheatcheck or you either. You're the one who wrote those lies about me. I've been thinking of suing you.
Yeah, that's why I wrote them. I'd love to get you on the witness stand under oath.
Get out of here.
Boris,
put down that gun.
Now, look.
Get out.
I will never change my testimony. Never.
Now, get out.
Look. Okay. Okay, I'm going.
Well, that's why I came over to tell you. I didn't want you to have to read about it in the paper, Mrs. Wheatcheck.
Wanda Skutnik won't change her testimony, and that licks us. We'll be having a chance in the world of getting Frank a pardon.
No chance. But you have a lawyer.
Yeah, Mr. Burns. He's going before the pardon board in Springfield in a couple of hours to request that the petition be withdrawn.
Oh, no. No, no.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Wheatcheck. I'm sorry.
Where to, mister?
Oh, the Chicago Times office, driver.
Okay. See the afternoon paper?
No.
Here you are. There's an interesting article in there about a forgery.
Yeah? This police break forgery case by enlarging writing on check 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's right.
Enlarging it 1,000 times. And like... Now, wait a minute. This picture I've got of Wanda and Frank together.
Oh.
Driver. Driver, get me to the police lab right away, will you?
Gentlemen, the special hearing of the Board of Pardons of the State of Illinois is now in session.
Mr. Chairman, gentlemen, I originally came here to ask that the petition of Frank Wheatcheck be withdrawn. But an hour ago, I received a call from McNeil of the Times. He informed me he's flying to Springfield with conclusive evidence in support of the petition of Frank Wiecek.
What is this evidence, Mr. Burns?
Well, unfortunately, my telephone conversation with him was brief. I'm afraid I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, representing the state's attorney's office, I object. If there is evidence, let it be presented at once. If not, we ask that the petition of Frank Wiecek be denied here and now.
Gentlemen, here's McNeil.
I'm sure I couldn't get here any sooner. May I have permission to address the board, Mr. Chairman?
Granted, Mr. McNeil.
Gentlemen, you're only interested in facts. Well, I finally got them. Now, Wanda Skutnik is the only one responsible for Wiecek's conviction. But she lied.
Why should she lie, Mr. McNeil?
I don't know, Mr. Faxon. Maybe prejudice, maybe a bribe. The point is, she lied.
Can you prove that, Mr. McNeil?
Wiecek was arrested at 5 a.m. on December the 22nd. But he wasn't booked until 6 p.m. December 23rd, a day and a half later.
Well, that's not a rare occurrence.
No, I know. But look at this picture. It shows Wanda and Wiecek entering the New City Station House together.
Yes, but we have no way of knowing when this was taken.
That's the point. Now, if I do prove it was taken on the 22nd of December, the day before Wanda Skutnik identified Wiecek at the police lineup, what then?
In that event, we might be obliged to render a favorable decision, but can you prove it?
Well, the Chicago police are enlarging a section of this picture. It'll be transmitted by wire photo to the offices of the Springfield Journal, just a few blocks from here. Now, all I'm asking you is to step over there and wait for the picture to come in.
Mr. Chairman, I object. This is an attempt to make journalistic capital of this hearing.
Mr. Chairman, the governor ordered this hearing for the purpose of arriving at the truth. If you fail to consider every item of evidence, you've defeated the very purpose of this hearing. What is your decision?
Gentlemen, we'll adjourn to the offices of the Springfield Journal.
Now what's coming in on that wire photo machine is a magnified enlargement of a small section of this picture I have in my hand.
You mean a close-up of Wanda Skutnik?
No, Mr. Chairman. What do you see in this picture?
Why, a policeman taking Wanda and Wiecek into the station house.
No, that's not what I mean. Look in the background.
There's just a newsboy on the sidewalk with some papers under his arm.
Yeah, that's the part we're enlarging.
What do you expect to find in the enlargement?
The date on the newspaper in the newsboy's hand.
Well, is that possible?
I don't know. It depends on a lot of things. It depends on the condition of the original negative and the light and shading and the paper and the density of the print. And I've been saying a few prayers, too. Here it is.
Let's see it.
Now, it has to be developed. Now, if you'll just follow the technician into the dark room, you'll be able to see by the red light there. Right, now he's putting it into the suit now. Now, watch that picture.
Just what do you expect to establish by this hocus-pocus, McNeil?
If the date on the newspaper is December 23rd, we've got no case. But if it's December 22nd, then it means Wanda Skutnik lied about not seeing Frank before the 23rd. It means Frank Wiecek was convicted on perjured testimony.
Wait, the picture's starting to appear.
Yeah. Yeah, there, it's coming through. Now, watch that date. What's that date? December 2. There it is. There it is. December 22nd. That's the date I've been hoping for. December 22nd.
Well, there it is, Frank. The outside. You're free.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a new suit and $10.
That's almost $1 a year, huh?
But it's a big thing when a sovereign state admits an error, Frank. There aren't many governments in the world that would do it.
No, I guess not.
How about your boy?
Oh, Helen and her husband came to see me. He said I could have the boy with me whenever I want.
Good. That's good.
So there'll be the boy and that'll be my mother. Yeah, it's a good world. Outside.
Next week, a brilliant actress recreates one of her most charming roles on Screen Directors Playhouse. Our story is The Affairs of Susan, and our star, Joan Fontaine, with Screen Director William Sider. Now, here again is tonight's star, Jimmy Stewart.
Good night, everybody.
And good night to you, Jimmy Stewart and Henry Hathaway. Call Northside 777 was presented through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox, currently releasing the Daryl F. Zanuck production, 12 O'Clock High, starring Gregory Peck. Jimmy Stewart is currently seen starring in the title role of the MGM picture, The Stratton Story. Henry Hathaway also appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox, producers of Prince of Foxes, starring Tyrone Power. Included in tonight's cast were Bill Conrad, Stacey Harris, Peggy Weber, Ann Stone, Rita Lynn, Ken Christie, Jim Nusser, Ted Von Eltz, Tyler McVeigh, Paul Fries, and Dan Ritz. Call Northside 777 was adapted for radio by Bob Reif, and original music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Screen Directors Playhouse is produced by Howard Wiley, with dramatic direction by Bill Karn. This is Jimmy Wallington speaking and inviting you to listen again next week when we present
Screen Directors Playhouse, star Joan Fontaine, production The Affairs of Susan, director William Sider.
Next, it's Bill Stern and the Sports Newsreel on NBC.
That is the Screen Directors Playhouse from December 9th, 1949, with Call Northside 777, starring Jimmy Stewart, as heard on NBC. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.